Welcome to Coffee with Catholic Workers, a podcast from and about folks involved in the Catholic worker movement. I'm Theo.
And I'm Lydia. We've both been involved and active in the Catholic worker for about the past decade, and we're excited to introduce you to some of our favorite people from the movement.
Today we're talking with Mary Beth Appel and Johanna Berrigan from the House of Grace Catholic Worker in Philadelphia. They talk to us about bringing their healthcare provider skills to a Catholic worker setting, why you should take your vacation at a Catholic worker house, and how it's worked so well for the medical clinic they partner with in Haiti to be Haitian run.
Let's go ahead and jump into the conversation. So welcome to the podcast. We're really excited to hear about some of the work you all are doing in Philadelphia. Can you maybe describe for us a little bit the Catholic worker in Philadelphia and the work that currently goes on there?
So the Catholic worker in Philadelphia is called the House of Grace. And the main work is the Catholic Worker Free Clinic, which is a clinic for homeless, uninsured, underinsured people. We used to say of the Kensington neighborhood, that's where we're located. However, we realize that people come from far and wide. So anybody that comes to the clinic for care is welcome. And it is best understood as a maybe fast track ER type. It's not, we don't establish as someone's primary care, but anybody that walks in, it is, we offer to help in whatever way we can. We have it's a little less during the pandemic, but roughly 20 volunteers who come, and most often they come once a week. They're on a regular schedule. And so it's an outpatient clinic. We have a house of hospitality called Cassie Temple House, named after Cassie Temple, who was part of the New York Catholic Worker for many, many years. And we also have, at the moment, 6 guests living there. So that's hospitality. And then we have 2 community gardens. That's the main, you know, kind of programs, for lack of a better word, not really programs, main offering. And then, you know, there's always the sub stuff that goes on within all of those, all of that work.
For example, the clinic also functions while we're open as somewhat of a drop-in center, and we have a shower project, and about 10 to 13 people a day can get a shower, and we're able to give out socks and sometimes other things, toiletries. So people come in and can ask us anything from helping them to make a phone call to reading a letter that they don't understand from a welfare or whatever to
rent, to help to with need, rent.
Yeah, any kind of support and wound care. Like it really runs the gamut of what we can do. We never know what each day is going to bring us.
And then we also have one other little part of the work that's kind of main work. And we have facilitated, for lack of a better word, or accompanied a clinic in Haiti called Kaila Sante. That is another clinic. However, it's actually established, unlike House of Grace, it's established as a primary care clinic with 2 doctors and a staff of about 11. And it actually does function as a primary care clinic in that community, again, for, you know, the most poor among the community. And again, everybody accesses it. So there are people who will offer to pay if they can, but it's really designed to meet the needs of those who cannot.
And that includes adult care, pediatric care, and OBGYN, where our clinic in Philly, the vast majority are adults.
Well, you all really stay busy. That is a lot to be juggling there. And, you know, one thing that's different in my experience of seeing different Catholic workers is maybe you all are unique, maybe you know differently. You all are actually like the caregivers at the clinic. A lot of Catholic worker houses who have some sort of health clinic type setup have a volunteer doctor who comes in or even just lets them use a corner of their space for a nonprofit to operate out of. But you all are different in that way.
Because we're healthcare providers?
Yeah, because you're healthcare providers. Do you think that that makes your Catholic worker experience different or anything?
That's a good question. Yeah. I'm not sure, because it's really the only perspective we come from. I volunteered at the New York Worker and the Baltimore Worker when I was in my 20s and was very interested in the Worker, but I'd volunteer one in their shelter and one in the soup kitchen, but I never saw myself as being a full-time Catholic worker, even though I was drawn to it because I had put a lot of energy into my career and studying and all that. And then when I found out that the Los Angeles Catholic Worker had a healthcare clinic, I was kind of delighted. So the fact that there is space for us to continue to work in the role in healthcare has been like super helpful to me. But I would say we do as much janitorial and administrative work as we do our healthcare work.
I think it's often very shocking to like young medical students that come in, and we've realize how odd it is that they see us as the provider. We see the patients, but then we close the clinic and we also empty the trash and clean the toilets. And that's just flips their notion somewhat of healthcare providers. But it is an interesting question. And I feel like I never gave it any thought, but probably because I encountered the Catholic worker in LA and there was always a clinic, you know? So I worked the kitchen, which I loved, and the clinic. And so transitioning here with both of us being healthcare providers made perfect sense that we would just continue as healthcare providers and doing what we did in LA. So it to us doesn't really seem unusual.
I'd actually love to hear more about sort of some of the specifics of the clinic and how you all function. So my wife is a family medicine doctor, and she is working on getting some more experience and maybe going back for a second residency in psychiatry because there's such a need. But she's always been interested in this idea of like starting a free clinic and thinking about how that could be paired or how to use family medicine in conjunction with the Catholic worker beyond the multitude of medical advice she gives out to everyone who walks through our house. So I'd love to hear more about like how this works for you all there.
The nuts and bolts of how the clinic works or how it works that we can be healthcare providers in a free clinic?
Perhaps a little bit of both. I'm thinking also for anyone else who is healthcare providers and trying to think about how can they both utilize their passion and their knowledge and skills they've built up, but also use it in a way that lives into Catholic worker values, perhaps doing something similar or perhaps in their field.
That's a really good question, and I don't know that I have a great answer. One thing is we do our best to stick with the Catholic worker tradition and keep in the very grassroots traditions. We don't pay ourselves or anybody. We don't charge anybody. We are licensed professionals, but we've never sought recognition in the network of free clinics, nor have we, we're not 501c3, so we don't apply for grants or anything like that. Because we don't have any employees, we're not subject to some governmental rules. And I'm sure folks who run houses of hospitality have similar experiences where in the world of social service organizations, there's a huge framework of regulations. Well, sort of the same way in healthcare. So like one thing that we would love to have but don't would be a lab. So we don't have a lab because once you have a lab, that's a whole complicated set of regulations. And I'm a nurse practitioner, Johanna's a physician assistant, so we're mid-level practitioners, and there are other mid-levels and a couple of physicians who come and volunteer with us, and we, you know, have collegial relationships or collaborative relationships with them. But I think because we've stayed very, very low-key and small, that's been what has made it be able to be sustainable. Every few months someone comes along, oh, if you did this, you could be that, you could get more money, you could be bigger, you could, you know, do minor surgery, you could fly to the moon, whatever. And I think we've just stayed really, really small with a very similar model all these years, which to me has been what's made it be able to last. But there's, you know, a downside to that. And there are so many creative, innovative things in healthcare that our hands really are tied in some ways because we're not part of the mainstream.
And it's not that there's not times when we say, oh my gosh, what are we really doing? You know, we're not doing enough. And we could have done this differently. And maybe if we connect with this organization, more could be offered. But we also know that when you get into that more kind of bureaucracy, the fear we've always had, and maybe the realistic perspective, is that takes personalism and presence and accompaniment and all those other kind of values we have, it seems like that they would be threatened. And so like a perfect example is a woman came in the other night, really very sick. And I think to add to what we already described about our clinic, we could add the language now of harm reduction, where we recognize we've always operated on a harm reduction model, meeting each person where they are, doing what we can, and accompanying them to what they're ready for. And so many times we have people walking in and saying, don't you remember me? You know, it's like, yeah, remind me, you know? And so that's a beautiful thing. And that just happened on Thursday night, where a woman, we haven't seen her in a year. She knows we're there. We have a nice relationship with her. We've probably done small things in the past. And now she's sick and she's completely disconnected from the system. And so we're able, and she's ready. So we're able to start now and accompany her back into care, connecting with the doctor and just being with her through it. I don't know if that speaks to what you mean.
Yeah, that connecting people with primary care and encouraging and helping people go to hospitals when they need to is a big part of what we do, because there's a huge reluctance because of all the obstacles to get into healthcare, particularly for people who are active in an addiction or have some cognitive limitations or some mental health issues, it's really, really hard. So we're doing accompaniment and trying to pave that way from making appointments to dropping people off to calling people ahead of time. We know people in a network of the FQHC, the federally qualified health centers, who can take these folks on as primary care provider, as their primary care provider. But it's often really, really tough because so many people come to us instead of the ER, but we are really not able to do what they need because they need an ER. And it's heartbreaking to see folks who just can't, you know. And I know there's fabulous healthcare providers all over the world, but we've heard it thousands of times about how people always tell us how disrespectfully they were treated wherever they go.
Back a little bit, one thing popped into my mind in terms of thinking about providers who really want to do this kind of work and be connected. I mean, our clinic would not be still here if it wasn't for all our providers who come, even if it's once a week, once a month, doctors, nurse practitioners, PAs, nurses, nursing students, medical doctors. They all contribute. And one blessing that we have is one of our former community members who's consistently stayed with our clinic as a provider one day a week, even though she's now married with two children and works in an FQHC. She is available, and that becomes like a little ticket where we say, you know, Katie works on Wednesdays, but you can go to her clinic and then you'll be able to see her both places wherever it's convenient. And that is a door for a lot of people who would otherwise be resistant.
And one other thing that we sadly forgot to mention is from 1997 until 2000, whenever the pandemic started, to winter of 2020, we had a dental clinic. Mm-hmm. With a volunteer dentist who came once or twice a month. We had three or four dentists over the years, but one who helped us start the dental clinic, which was very challenging to start because it involves plumbing, electricity, suction, et cetera. A health clinic, you basically need a place for somebody to sit and a stethoscope and you're good to go. But it was pretty challenging to put together a dental clinic. And she moved to Florida right at the beginning of the pandemic. And the dental needs are off the chart outrageous. And there isn't a week that goes by that we don't see a couple people with dental abscesses. And the main role of the dentist was to pull teeth. And in Philadelphia, I'm assuming in other places as well, if you're on medical assistance, it's still pretty tough to access dental care in a timely fashion. So that is a really huge loss. So if I have one ask for this for this podcast, it would be if there's any dentists in Philly that would like to come a couple hours a month, we've got a real delightful operatory. And Johanna has always been our dental assistant, and we're good to go.
So both of you started as healthcare professionals, it sounds like, prior to getting involved with the Catholic Worker. How did you both first encounter the Catholic Worker, and what led you to get involved?
I went to Villanova and heard about Dorothy Day on the day she died, and quickly became fascinated, and then just went on a spring break trip to the Lower East Side of New York and spent a half a day putting labels on the newsletters. And then within a year moved to New York and started volunteering at their soup kitchen, and then moved to Baltimore and got to meet Brendan and Willa and volunteered at Viva House, and then moved back to Philly and Sister Peter Claver House was just starting. And I never volunteered there, but I would go to their mass and potlucks. And then when we came back from LA, we were with Sister Peter Claver House for a brief time, and then kind of broke off and started the House of Grace in 1994.
I was living and working in Los Angeles as a nurse. And I was with a very good friend, and she mentioned to me that her mother told her that the Catholic worker needed help, and would I come with her to the soup kitchen some weekend? And I was like, the Catholic worker? Like, I had never heard of the Catholic worker. And I said, sure, I'd love to go. I'll go. I'll come. I'll help. And so we together went on a Saturday just to help at the kitchen because they were short-staffed. And ironically, when I got out of the car, I looked around and I thought, I feel like I've been here before. And I actually had been. The year before, another friend had said to me, my friend works at this clinic on Skid Row. You might really be interested in it. Let's go. And we went one evening and never went back. But when I got out of the car, I was like, okay, something is calling me. I'm here for the second time in a year. And then I just started, same as probably Mary Beth, I started volunteering when I could on a Saturday. I realized as I started working 12-hour shifts at my job, I could help on Fridays at the clinic, but I didn't speak any Spanish. But I still came and eventually convinced this nun that I worked with, who was from, I think, Argentina. She spoke fluently, and we went and helped every Friday for a while. And then eventually I heard about the summer program.
How did you hear about the summer program, Johanna?
How I heard about the summer program was, and I hope I can really remember it, I was very enthralled with the worker. You know, I loved it. I went whenever I could. I honestly don't ever recall in those moments really talking with anybody in any great depth. I remember everybody that was there, but I remember sitting in the community room and Catherine saying, your name is in our book from way back. And I was like, yeah, I used to sneak in on Fridays, you know. But how I heard about the summer program, I was sitting on a break at my job. And this is so embarrassing, but a lot of my friends were like, listen, we're all going to go on like this Club Med cruise. And it's supposed to be like a lot of fun and you'll meet somebody. And why don't you think about doing this Club Med cruise? And I hadn't given it much thought or certainly had no plans, but for some reason this Club Med thing was on, people were inviting me to go with them. So I'm on a break at my job and I flip over the agitator and there's an ad that says, are you tired of the same old Club Med vacation? Why not considering taking your vacation at the Catholic worker? And I literally stood up and I was like, that's what I'm going to do. But it was the spirit moving, the irony, the synchronicity, whatever you want to call it, that I had just heard in like the 2 weeks before, never heard of it before, of Club Med, and then turned this over. And I thought, who would say tired of a Club Med vacation? So that's how it all started. I thought, that's what I'm going to do. And so when it came down to it, this is to the credit of the LA worker. In reality, I couldn't do the summer program. I was working a full-time job. And, you know, to just, you know, I dreamed that I could get someone to take my apartment and take a long vacation. In the end, it didn't pan out. And when Jeff asked me, are you going to come to this program? I said, yeah, nah. And he said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to make you an extern and you're going to come whenever you can. And that is exactly what happened. And as the goddesses would have it, I ended up getting a lot of time off during that period. And I went every Wednesday evening and every weekend. And Sandy Huckabee was also an extern. So we were roommates, had a little space for whenever we could be there, even though it wasn't full time.
The LA workers are trying to recruit for their summer program right as we speak. Maybe they should rerun that Club Med ad.
Way to go, LA worker, recruiting people. So one of the interesting things about the Catholic worker is there's so many different iterations of what it looks like. And that's part of kind of the beauty of the Catholic worker and some of its complexity. And so everyone's experiences within the movement are so very different. But for both of you, what are some of the parts of beauty that you've experienced while involved with the Catholic worker? And what are some of the struggles?
Well, one of the parts of beauty is all the wonderful people we've got to meet over the years, the guests, the volunteers, the folks who've come to our, we always had Monday night liturgies, potlucks, Bible studies, roundtable discussions, the patients, just all the folks. And we've literally had people from absolutely every walk of life. And that's been really, really, really wonderful. You know, there's been a variety of struggles. The noise and the dirt on our street is ridiculous, and that's been very challenging. The times that we have wished we could do more has been hard, and life in community certainly has its struggles and challenges. Those are the first things I'm thinking of.
I think one of the things I've appreciated, and I think it has to do with, I guess, under the broad perspective of the practice of the works of mercy, how varied and how all of the opportunities to do so many different things within that. And you're just constantly challenged to see where the call is. It's not a prescribed job description, but you have the advantage of being able to really be listening to the Spirit and following where you believe you're called. That's, I think, one of the beautiful aspects of the work, and also exactly what Mary Beth said. The many, many people, and where would we be, right, without the people, the community, the extended community, here in Philadelphia of not only people connected to the worker, but other activist communities that we've connected with over the years on various issues and really worked with. Has been really amazing. And I think for us now, I bring it to the current when I think of struggles. The struggle now is, you know, when you think of the works of mercy, caring for the sick or sheltering the homeless, clothing the naked, well, what do we do for people so badly affected by substance use disorder and really literally walking by people in freezing, below freezing weather who can't manage to get themselves inside? And how do we approach understanding harm reduction, but when it is coming to the point where literally we are telling you, you will lose your leg, you will lose your arm. What can we do to help support you to get the care you need? And it's such a complex issue of the day with fentanyl and ever new deadly substances that are highly addictive and just, it's a horror. It's a nightmare. Not a struggle, a nightmare.
The front page of today's New York Times has an article called Mix of Animal Sedative Brings Fresh Horror to Street Drugs.
Oh my gosh.
So it's okay. I think our neighborhood has always been considered one of the nation's biggest drug open air markets. And it's just really, really challenging.
I have to interject this. Mary Beth is just showing me this. I did not see this article. This woman, I just on Thursday afternoon did the memorial service for her partner. Her wife died.
So this is the New York Times, and it's a picture of one of Johanna's patients from her part-time job.
Yeah.
That is truly, I didn't read the article yet. I didn't know that. Oh, that is truly.
And I met the woman in the article whose picture is right here. I met her years ago when I was working on a van as a provider offering medication assisted therapy, a treatment. It's now it's MOUD. I don't know if you've heard those initials before. But it's not coming to my mind. Medication for over opiate use disorder. But I met her and doing wound care for her. So it is truly, this is the struggle of the day. It is so hard.
Wow. One other thing that jumped to my mind of one of the beauties is that from living in the neighborhood, we are, our house and house of hospitality is about a 7-minute walk from our health clinic, and the community gardens are right behind the house. And we've always had a dog or two dogs. And one of the beauties has been just, we walk around the neighborhood all the time, and just all the people who are patients, particularly who we see and neighbors all the time, every day, and we feel really like we're an integrated part of the community. And that's been really lovely and really fun and really funny lots of times, because we just see people constantly. And when I was first thinking about coming to the Catholic Worker full-time, I was working and volunteering in this area, but living in a closer to a suburban kind of existence. And my head just felt like it was spinning, just going back and forth from one neighborhood to another. So it helped kind of calm a lot of that from being here full time. I mean, now we face issues around gentrification and housing costs being outrageous. So a lot of the folks who lived in the neighborhood and are being priced out. So we're facing a whole lot of new struggles in the future.
I'd be curious to hear more about the Haiti project and the history. How did that get started? How did you get interested? And how does that all work for you all?
So it really started, I was invited to go to Haiti right after Aristide was removed in a coup in, I think, 2004. And there were all these reports of human rights abuses happening. And there was no one there kind of witnessing or bringing back the news of what was really happening on the ground. And so it was a small group. It was Kathy Boylan, Bill Quigley, and Bishop Gumbleton, and I think just and me, right? Yeah, just four of us for this initial go to Haiti, see what's happening, and be like eyewitness accounts, bring back eyewitness accounts. And Bill Quigley did an amazing job of writing up a report for Pax Christi of that trip. But During that trip, we all met a priest by the name of Father Jean-Just, who was a very dynamic human rights, for lack of a better word, parish priest in Port-au-Prince in a parish called St. Clair's. He was also very well known in the States. Maybe he was in the seminary in New York, but also was connected to the Haitian community in Miami, where he ran a community center. So anyway, we met him, and Haiti is like no other place you've ever been. You can't imagine. I want to say it simultaneously, the degree of unbelievable beauty and unbelievably beautiful people with the most dire poverty I've ever seen in my life. And I was just in that state of overwhelm. And Father Jean-Just was sharing with us that a woman from California, Margaret Trost, had started a food program, but now he was still in need of health care. And like in this moment, I practically wanted to leap up and say, like, how can we help? And at the same moment, Tom Gumbleton from Detroit, a bishop from Detroit, taps me and says, you could do that, you know, like kind of simultaneously. And I was like, I want to hear more about how we could help, because sitting in Haiti and knowing where we are in Philadelphia with, you know, how many teaching hospitals, universities, institutions, medical schools, you know, you name it, certainly we should be able to provide something. And so I came back and talked with Mary Beth about, you know, I'd love to do something. And as a community, let's have House of Grace be partnership with this parish. And then, I mean, it was very long story after that, but I also called Bishop Gumbleton on the phone and said, like, I think he might have even been here. And I said, I'm really interested in doing this. Mary Beth is open to exploring it. We will help the community, but will you be part of it and help us as well? And he said, yes. And so that's kind of the early beginnings. A key piece of information is very early on, it turned out that Dr. Paul Farmer was in Philadelphia speaking of Partners in Health. I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Farmer. In those early days, so Mary Beth and I made it a point to go to that talk and waited in line with hundreds of other people to talk with him. And I don't know if you want to chime in, Mary Beth, and talk about that night. But it was amazing, because I had just come home, and I think probably we would have had the mindset, you know, we'll organize groups of doctors and nurses and we'll make trips to Haiti.
Right. We had done mission trips with other friends who had sister city projects in El Salvador and in other parts of Latin America. So that was what we were familiar with. So he was at one hand very supportive, on the other hand saying, you can't do it that way. It has to be all Haitian led and Haitian run. So that totally shifted things. And we had a couple more conversations with him over the years, which turned into like sitting for a half a day meeting with him, and very much going by the David Werner, where there is no doctor, empowerment kind of model. And that sort of one thing led to another, which is what really the roots of Kaila Sante were. And that was, It was a community-based home visit, very simple health education program until the earthquake, which was January 2010. And then that really shifted things because we were one of the few groups that had a presence on the ground in Port-au-Prince and had a lot of supplies there. We were in the process of trying to open an actual clinic. So we had a lot of clinic supplies and we knew a lot of people. So that helped us in two ways. One, Johanna and a team were able to get to Haiti by the end of January and subsequently went six times that year, hauling hundreds of pounds of supplies. And it gave us some credibility with supporters. And we were given a extremely generous support from many, many, many people to turn Kailasanta into a full-on primary health clinic, first off in a tent and then into a rented building over the years.
Yeah. And actually, not to jump too quickly to the end or to the present, but it is his wisdom in saying to us, come on, guys, there's no sustainability if you just take groups. What people need is healthcare ongoing. Don't do it that way. And where we find ourselves today is thanking him. I'm literally in the process of praying to him all the time because Haiti, the political situation and life for people in Haiti is worse than it's ever been. More violent with more gang activity than we can imagine, I think. And the only reason that the clinic is functional is that the staff is Haitian and they're there because I think most groups have left Haiti because of, you know, the instability and how frightening it is to live there. And I mean, my staff doesn't want our staff or our people running the clinic in Haiti don't even want us to come because not only would it be a threat to our lives, it threatens their lives if they're seen connected. So we haven't been able to go in 3 years, but the clinic is still going strong. And we have weekly meetings and monthly Zoom gatherings with the entire staff and the board. So that's the benefit of his wisdom was well taken. And I do want to add this. We were sitting there that night chatting with him, and we were actually, he was so kind and so attentive, and we were actually getting self-conscious because there were so many people waiting, but he was suggesting something. I forget what it was. And Mary Beth said something like, yeah, well, I don't know how that, you know, would work because, you know, like we're Catholic workers. And he sat back and he goes, guys, come on. I'm a Catholic worker. And we just smiled. We were like, oh my God, we love this guy. So it was just a joy to not only get his wisdom, to be part of his humor and get to know him in the little bit of a way that we did.
Now we feel like we're in a bit of a transition with Kailasanta in Haiti, and that it's become increasingly more challenging to raise enough money to pay the salaries of the staff. And things have seemed much more complicated regarding the clinic having a legal license in Haiti, which we've been working on for years. And typically a project like this would have the backing of a 501c3 and be able to raise money in a more traditional nonprofit way. So we are actively in the process of finding a partner to help ensure the clinic becomes more sustainable. We have great hopes that we will be able to be partners with this one project that's already in Haiti that's based in the US but we are still actively looking for any other ideas, thoughts, suggestions for how to help this partnership happen, because we have had, you know, many people have given us ideas and they all involve us somehow having both legal and accounting skills or finding people with those to sort of switch the whole philosophy. And that's just so far out of our experience to suddenly have an understanding of the nonprofit world and to be able to make that happen. So we feel that we need to somehow merge or blend with a bigger organization to help make that more sustainable.
But in the early days, and for many years, it was a very slow growing project, which I used to get very frustrated with, because it did start as just community outreach. And I remember one time feeling like, oh my gosh, what's really happening here? This is moving so slow. We don't even have a place. And Haitians are just the most inspiring people. One of the guys turned to me and said, Johanna, you know, relax. If it happens fast, it won't last. That's our proverb. Anything that happens fast doesn't last. So I slowed down and took that proverb to heart. And I must say, we did the combo of accompanying the staff to do the work themselves, but took many delegations over the years, short term. And that community that was built around the clinic is kind of what's sustaining it now. And I'm just really grateful and trying again. I'm at that crossroads again of needing to be patient in this next phase of the partnership building.
It always can be such a difficulty, particularly when the need is so overwhelmingly large and feeling like this desire to need to ramp up things for effectiveness, for almost this like production value of this drop in the bucket. But that's one of the beauties of personalism, of recognizing that those personal relationships were actually what was valuable in the end. So many people who listen to the podcast are not currently part of the Catholic Worker, but sort of interested in getting involved. What advice would you give to anyone who is not currently part of the Catholic Worker movement, but has interest in it?
I guess the first thing that came to my mind would be reading and learning about Dorothy Day and the life of Dorothy Day. And, you know, the long loneliness had an incredible impact on me in the beginning, and going to talks at the Worker. I better not say any names, but one presentation in particular was really, really impactful. I left one Wednesday night in the summer program just knowing that I wanted to stay with the Catholic Worker. And that, in addition to actually going and volunteering and being not only with the community, but more importantly, with the people that are being served or that we're with, not that we're not all being served, because we very much are, but, you know, meeting people is the best way possible, I think.
Yeah, I would agree to go and find your local Catholic Worker, volunteer, attend their roundtables or liturgies or whatever, get involved in any way you can. And if you're young and free and not tied to a place, go stay at a Worker for a couple of weeks or a couple of months, check it out. And for folks not involved who want to be a Worker, it's not uncommon for people to want to start a Worker rather than be a part of a Worker. So my recommendation will be to not do that, to go and live at a worker for a period of time, learn from others, the best school. We had the Los Angeles School of the Catholic Worker. And we did not come back to Philly with the intention of a house. We accidentally started the House of Grace.
Unintentionally.
Yes. So, you know, that is totally meeting the other workers, meeting the guests, meeting the people who come to the soup lines or the clinics or the clothing rooms or whatever. That's kind of the school of the Catholic Worker.
And I don't see myself as needing to or having the agenda of plugging for the summer program, but I would. If you are able to, I don't think there's any other Catholic workers in the country that offer that opportunity for experience as a live-in community person and being exposed to the worker. And it is life-changing. And I would encourage anyone, if they can, to look into doing that summer program. I left the summer program at the end, even as an extern. I wasn't there 5 days a week, but I was there, or 7 days a week. I was there a lot. And when the program was over, I walked back to my job, sad that the program was over, walked down the halls and thought, yeah, this is going to be over soon too. Like I just knew I was going to go back with the Catholic Worker.
I feel like I should say, for people who are interested in some of the more farming parts of the Catholic Worker, St. Isidore Catholic Worker Farm does offer an agronomic university cohort.
Yeah.
They're currently accepting applications there for people who maybe aren't quite as interested in the city aspects of the Catholic Worker.
Yeah, that sounds so interesting. That program, yeah.
Can I just say one thing that's a response to an earlier question? I think we may be unique or close to unique in a small minority in that we're in healthcare, but I have been so impressed by our friends who we have met and grown to love and know over these years in the Worker, that the Worker has such an unbelievable bunch of bright, funny, smart,
dedicated, committed,
theological, with an unbelievable array of talents. And it's very impressive to see and hear and meet these folks with such amazing talents.
So you all are obviously very busy. You haven't had a chance to listen to all of the back catalog of Coffee with Catholic Workers. Only the first couple episodes. We recently started at the very end doing a lightning round where we ask guests a few quick questions. Nothing too crazy or challenging. And if y'all are willing, we'd love to jump into that.
Sure. If we get the answers right, do we get a prize?
Yeah, the satisfaction of being the smartest Catholic worker on today's episode.
Okay, yeah, however you want to, I'll start. I'll take the first lightning round question.
All right. In four words or less, what does the other person bring to community?
Kindness, compassion, love, and spirituality.
Do I answer now?
Yes.
Sure, go for it.
Amazing strength, amazing sense of humor, amazing organizational skills, and indefatigability.
That was a great word there. I don't even think I can say that last word.
I was afraid I wouldn't.
Philly is the best because
we have a big city with a very small, homey, quirky community of people here in Philly with a lot of just down home kind of folks.
Philly is the best because, oh my gosh. Well, the first thing that pops to mind is the committed activist community. I don't know if it's right to name a few, but Catholic Peace Fellowship, Brandywine Community, they're amazing. And there's also something called Just Listening that is connected with our community. So I would say Philly is the best because of its people and their commitment to social justice.
And what is the best donation ever, with best being a very broad and general term for what might be considered best?
I would say that our gardens have become, our gardens that we have squatted on for 25 plus years have become part of a land trust connected with the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society. And because of that, we were gifted with an amazing renovation of one of our community gardens this year that involves huge boulders from a quarry and a gazebo, in addition to 640 perennials.
I would say the best donation was at the height of the earthquake, when everything felt so absolutely devastating and horrifying, and to realize the love and the concern for the people of Haiti that poured in through those donations that enabled us to provide relief during that time and care during that time, just was kind of overwhelming, because we didn't really expect it. It just came pouring in. And I want to say one other one, but the other one that comes to my mind of recent that doesn't have to do with serving the people we serve, it has to do with when Mary Beth and I were both simultaneously sick with COVID. The love, the support, the soup, the food, the kindness that came our way was unbelievable. We experienced so much grace and the power and presence of spirit for healing during that time. So it was just really touching.
Yes, I second that one.
It's fun to sort of see these, hear these questions and think like, oh, what would I answer for that? And I will say, like, the first thing that popped into my mind with that was one time someone left us a milk crate of dinner plates on our front porch without telling us. And they were actually really useful, but it was the donation we didn't know that we needed.
And the worst donation that I recall was a couple years ago, we got a half of a jar of Vicks VapoRub that had expired in 1992.
We need to have an entire podcast with bad Catholic worker donations and just have people kind of phone in to an open line or something. Well, we've really enjoyed having both of you on. Any things we haven't hit on or any closing thoughts that either of you would like to share?
You know, I don't want to deny that there are times when, you feel like people are like, oh, you do so much good in the world. And we're going like, yeah, you're not here. We're cleaning the toilets. We're, you know, doing whatever. It's all mundane. A lot of times it feels like questioning what the value. And then we sit at a time like this and you realize we're really gifted to be part of the most incredible journey of life with really meaningful work that you feel inspired to get up and do. And the challenge is part of it. And finding the meaning is part of it. But I just can't imagine doing anything else.
I have two different thoughts. One is to tag along to what Johanna said, is that Like our clinic is open a couple hours, five times a week. And a lot of the things we do aren't like a full-time on top of another full-time on top of another full-time project. And then the other thing I wanted to say is that, I understand that probably a lot of the other podcasts are more devoted to hospitality. And one of the things that's been really fun with our community over the years, we've also had other community members, which we haven't really mentioned or given too much gratitude to, although it is definitely there. And when we started in the early 90s, hospitality was a lot of folks that we met at the clinic, and a lot we met through a local AIDS clinic. That was in a time when everybody was succumbing to AIDS. So we had a lot of folks living with us with HIV and AIDS who were maybe waiting for housing. We had a lot of folks with trying to get into recovery programs, folks with issues around mental illness, whatever. And then over the years, as we switched and ended up in two houses, we've shifted hospitality probably 15, 20 years ago to more folks who were immigrants and refugees. So we've had amazing folks, I think, from like five continents, from Burma, from Iraq, from Algeria, from Chad, Ivory Coast, Congo, Guatemala, most recently Venezuela and Paraguay. We've had folks from all over the world, and that's been really, really, really amazing. And the hospitality with the immigrants has been just really neat and really eye-opening to get a sense and learn a little bit about all these cultures. And it's also one of the great things about Philly is Philly has just a huge immigrant community, folks from all over. And it's just been wonderful to be part of that.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you very much.
We want to give thanks again to Mary Beth and Johanna for sharing with us today. We really enjoyed our conversation with them.
Yeah, one of the things I've been thinking about since we spoke with them is like how many things they have going on there. They run a clinic. They have a house of hospitality where they are housing folks. They help coordinate on fundraising money for Haiti. They have a community garden project. And then I don't know if we discussed it, but then they also both work part-time too at like paying jobs. Sometimes we talk to these Catholic workers and it's just like, wow.
They also referenced at different points in time doing things like showers for people and dental clinic. It really shows, right, that sometimes we just sort of limit ourselves, I think, to what we can imagine rather than thinking and stretching what we can do and what we can be active with.
Yeah. I think it's great too that they brought to the movement the skills that they had. And I think it's just really good illustration of how so many different people can fit in different ways with different passions and abilities and just use the gifts they have and apply them to doing the Catholic worker.
I did appreciate one of the points they brought out of you don't necessarily have to live in a Catholic worker to contribute or use their one's skills. That without the providers and volunteers coming in for their free clinic, that wouldn't exist. And I think that sometimes is a question that comes up of how can people get involved with the Catholic worker if they can't necessarily, for whatever life circumstances, live in one? And I think there's the piece of volunteering with different houses, but also sort of looking at what resources and skills does a person have, and how can somebody live into Catholic worker values in whatever context they happen to be in life.
Yeah, and it even they even mentioned that it was helpful to have volunteers who are like plugged in into more, you know, quote unquote, normal or nonprofit or institutional settings. They mentioned a provider who got to know folks at their clinic there with the Catholic worker, and then they could point at her being like, yeah, you need more care. You can see this very same provider at this other place that can do more for you.
And it is this piece of building this idea of movement, that the Catholic worker isn't really meant to be these individual isolated houses doing these things, but this movement of a societal and cultural shift into these different ideals, these different values.
Yeah, and bringing as many folks on board in this project is necessary, you know, if we're going to help folks out and if we're going to change this filthy, rotten system too.
For sure. One of the other things that really struck me in this interview, there was this really sort of poignant moment of the article in the New York Times about kind of this these struggles of substance use disorders and just this piece of seeing that article there and recognizing the person in it, I think really hits home that these larger issues, these larger struggles in society, they have faces to them. And with this piece of personalism, when you get to know the people affected, it's no longer just a headline. It's what's happening to your friends or happening to the people you know and are active with. And there's both this piece where that makes things become really special, these relationships, and at the same time, it makes it painful. It's easier at times to keep a distance from these larger issues of poverty, of substance use, of discrimination. All of these big things are sometimes in a weird way easier to deal with or manage with if we don't actually know the people involved.
Yeah, I think I'm not exactly sure if I believe in like miracles and stuff like that, but sometimes I feel like I'm hanging around the Catholic worker movement and something like weird but poignant just happens. Like we just happen to be interviewing the Philly Catholic worker that day, and then this person they knew is on the front page of the New York Times, you know? And so we're able to like talk about that, and they can talk about that relationship, and it gives us this like real concrete image. So when something like that happens, I sometimes I wonder, like, I don't know, maybe there is like some sort of Holy Spirit moving out there or something like that.
Providential for sure. Well, we will link that article in our podcast description. And for any healthcare providers who are out there and interested, definitely contact the House of Grace Catholic Worker in Philadelphia if you'd like to volunteer with them. Or if you know any dentists in particular, they were very interested in trying to find a dentist who'd be willing to help out with a clinic there. But that wraps up for us another episode of Coffee with Catholic Workers. If you want to reach out to us with any comments, suggestions, clarification of thought, email us at coffeewithcatholicworkers@gmail.com. We want to thank Chris from Bloomington Catholic Worker for help with editing, David Hayes for our music, and Becky McIntyre for our graphic.
Thanks for joining us again for some clarification of thought. We hope today's conversation and discussion have been enlightening, and maybe even that you're encouraged to go out and help build a world where it's easier to be good.